Super real.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Julian Morgans, and you're listening to What It Was Like, the show that asks people who have lived through big, dramatic events what it was like. Today we're talking to a guy who bought a cruise ship. Or specifically, he bought a stake in a cruise ship with two mates, and the three of them tried to create this floating, libertarian utopia anchored off the coast of Panama. Only it kind of didn't work out because of red tape. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's just start with an introduction. Today's guest is a man named Grant Remond. And Grant is a tech entrepreneur, and he's very interested in something called seastanding. And basically, seastanding is a movement of people who want to live in houses built on stilts over the ocean. Like, okay, imagine a little house suspended up on a pole, and it's kind of floating on the water. Living in something like that is called seastanding. And Grant is a big exponent of seastanding. And he and two friends thought that a way to jumpstart the whole seastanding movement would be to buy a cruise ship. That way, they could provide heaps of accommodation for like-minded entrepreneurial people who also wanted to live on the ocean, and they could all live together in a kind of big oceanic sharehouse. Now, full disclosure, I'm actually recording this introduction a few months after I'd already done the interview. So I know answers to questions now that I didn't know when I was doing the interview. So you'll hear me being like, hey, Grant, what kind of a ship did you buy? And Grant, well, he's a little cagey on the details, just simply because of the sales terms. But I can talk about this stuff, and all of the info is on the internet, so I'll just tell you right now. Those guys, they bought an ex-P&O cruise ship called the Pacific Dawn. It's this big, curvaceous, white ship. It was built in 1991. They paid $9.5 million for it, but here's an interesting little fact. Pre-pandemic, it was probably worth around $100 million, But cruise ships were it was everything must go sale at the time, so they scooped it up for a very cool 9.5. So today we're going to hear about what that was like. What's it like owning your own personal cruise ship? What's it like spending Christmas Day alone on your ship, just exploring all the different rooms with a master key and bombing water slides? Because as you're about to hear, that's exactly what Grant did. So let's do it. Here's Grant Remond. All right, well, Grant, let's just start at the beginning. Like, I understand you grew up in Canada. Sort of set the scene for me. Who are you?
Yeah, I grew up in Canada. I always loved being close to the water or in the water, being in the water all the time. I spent just about every weekend growing up in my aunt's pool, and I just could never get enough. And wrote my first software program when I was about eight.
8 years old.
Yeah.
What was the program?
It was back in 1980, so it was back when the first home computer really hit the market, which was a TRS-80, and it was a black and white screen, which we turned into color by putting a green filter over it. That's a very, okay. Very old
nice.
School. That's the first
yeah, wow.
color monitor was just a green filter that was put over top of the screens. So I just wrote a program for a science fair project, and it was very simple, but it was really my when I just started coding software. I'm not a coder now, but I know enough to direct a team of developers. So I have a software development company I've been running for the last 12 years. I had an online TV series for hairdressers that turned into mobile application development for producing an app that our viewers could watch our show on. So we had like 500,000 hairdressers watching our show all over the world. So I created that app for ourselves. And then
that's a hell of a niche that you've tapped into.
Yeah. Very niche market. Before that, I was a scissor sharpening expert, actually, for hair salons.
Wow.
And that turned into teaching beauty schools, scissor education. Then I was living in San Francisco for a while, and one of my roommates was one of the top internet marketers in his niche. And then one of my other roommates was one of the six co-founders of PayPal. So I had all this tech savviness around me, and they were just encouraging me to do something online. So I scaled my scissor sharpening business to an online education program for hairdressers. And then that turned into an app business. Then that turned into developing apps for Wella Professionals, Clairol, OPI, Sebastian, a lot of L'Oreal brands, about 20 L'Oreal brands at one time. And then I outsourced that business completely.
Wow. It seems to me that you're a textbook case of a guy who sees a niche. You're like, oh, here's a problem that a fairly lucrative market is experiencing all the time. I'm going to solve it. And then you make some money and move on to the next lucrative problem. It's impressive. I wish I'd done more of that.
Well, it didn't always work out so well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess for every couple of attempts, there's one that works, and that's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Tell me about how seastanding came into your life.
Well, I was actually packing to go to a conference, and I just had this weird feeling that not too long from now, not too far in the future, I would be packing to actually move. And so the idea was planted in my head. And then I got on this plane that I was, getting ready to go on, and met with someone on the plane who was wearing a shirt saying, "Stop arguing, start seasteading." And I was like, "What is that?" And it was like, so we started talking, and he was associated with my now business partners and building the production engineering prototype for a floating house that would float in international waters or in the middle of the ocean.
So let's just talk about seastanding for a moment. Mm-hmm. For anyone who's listening at home and doesn't have any idea what it is, can you please explain?
Sure. Seasteading is the idea that you can build a home or a community, and it can be floating in international waters. So it's basically a floating city, floating community. I like the idea of it because you can, on land, when you put a house down, your neighbors are your neighbors, and you can't do anything about it unless you move. But with a floating house, if you don't like your neighbors, you can just get up and move your house. And in 10 minutes, you're at a new location. So it's a great way of making sure you have great neighbors and you love the environment that you're in.
Tell me, when did the cruise ship come into it?
So the cruise ship idea was now something we thought, well, we'd maybe get there in 5 or 10 years. But then the pandemic happened. And the cruising industry was devastated. So we thought, well, maybe we can find a cruise ship that's on sale for a deep discount.
Yeah, so, fire sale.
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of put some price targets and what we were looking for a price per room, per cabin. And we just waited until ships started to come into that range, and then We found one that was in the range.
Can we just wind it back a moment? So at the point where you decide to buy a cruise ship, I mean, what does that process look like? Is there like an eBay for cruise ships? Is, you know, like, where do you start?
Well, there's companies that sell cruise ships, used ships, actually. Not specifically cruise ships, but we were looking for, we just went to a website and we checked out a couple websites and found some salespeople. Just like you'd have a real estate sales agent for buying land, you have agents that sell ships.
I'm guessing it was pandemic, so you weren't touring these things. You were just looking at them online and sort of clicking through some photos?
Yep, exactly. We had to buy sight unseen.
Okay, all right. So when you finally find a ship that, you gave them an offer and they accepted it, what did you end up with? Like, what ship did you buy?
We actually can't say the name of the ship, that the original name of the ship.
That's all right.
That's under the non-disclosure agreement we had with them. But once again, that's, you know, check out Wikipedia. So we named the ship the Satoshi, or the MS okay. Satoshi. And so we wanted to name it after the creator of Bitcoin, which, you know, was just a symbolic name for us that we thought that a lot of people would gravitate towards and would give people the idea of, you know, what we wanted to create. We wanted to have a floating community that would actually be anchored in one place, would be anchored in Panama. And we wanted to be, to have a crypto cruise ship where people could come and you could have, you could just live around people that were into the same thing you are. So it would be a very like-minded community of people that are entrepreneurs, digital nomads, and most of them would be very familiar and a supporter of cryptocurrencies. So it just seemed like a really amazing idea to be able to surround yourself with like-minded people.
Yeah. Can you describe the cruise ship? Like, how big are we talking? What's just the sort of the look?
It was massive. It was like a normal cruise ship that you would go on a cruise ship vacation on. It was like the Love Boat. It's 1,000. There's okay. a total of 1,000 rooms, give or take a couple. There are 777 passenger cabins, and then 200 plus staff cabins. And then there's a casino. There's many restaurants, bars, a pool.
How many restaurants?
Well, there's a food court, so there's several small little kind of restaurants in there. There is a couple of very nice, big, elegant restaurants, like maybe two or three. And then there's a big pool area, so you can get food there. If you, when the ship was running, then you'd be able to get food and drinks there. And then it had staff restaurants and a few other small places.
I imagine there was a cinema on board, maybe a gym.
There's a gym. There's a huge screen on the patio where the pool was. So at night you could watch movies there, which was kind of cool. I watched, I think it was Aladdin that they played. It was really, really kind of cool watching it there.
In the pool, when you were swimming?
Well, I wasn't swimming. But it was at the pool, like the top deck that had a pool and had a lounge and a big screen. So they played Aladdin there. And they had also, I don't remember how many seats, but they had a huge theater for live performances. And we wanted to actually do talks and educational programs there. So that was kind of our thought of what we would do there. And it was massive. It was like, you would expect to see a big Broadway show there. It was big enough for a nice size show.
Yeah, wow. See, I'd have thrown on some cabaret there. Well, certainly my wife would have, but you know, TED Talks sound good too.
Yeah.
I won't say the name, but I looked this thing up on the internet, and I know that it did a lot of cruises around Australia. It was sort of stationed in Australia for a long time.
Well, I think you can say the name. I just can't.
I can confirm or deny. Okay. All right. Well, sure. Then it's a P&O cruise. And, you know, P&O, I'm pretty sure you've got P&O in the States, but certainly in Australia. They're famous for sort of being a very 90s, early 2000s kind of vibe, where lots of, you know, happy families smeared in zinc cream. And I don't know. Cruising has always seemed to me a bit like taking a vacation in a shopping mall. Like it's a very particular style of holiday, which appeals to me on one level, but then I find it also quite funny on another level. But the scale of cruise ships, amazing. Like, you know, just when you're ticking off all the rooms and all the stuff you've got on there, like it's pretty amazing. Okay. All right. So you make an offer, it goes through, you end up with this enormous cruise ship. At what point do you get in, like, at what point do you fly over and get on board?
Well, my business partner, Rudy, flew over and picked it up, sailed it across the Atlantic and, brought it into Panama. And at that point, I went and I got on the ship as soon as it arrived. And that was, okay. I think, the 22nd of December, 2020.
Okay. So you showed up at the dock. Can you give me your, like, what was your first impression when you showed up and looked at it?
Wow. It's like it's a little bit of disbelief. It's like, how did I become part owner of a cruise ship and this massive, massive thing. It was quite amazing. The scale of like how big it is. I haven't actually had never been on a cruise ship before.
Yeah, me neither. I've never been, I've just seen photos of them and gone, wow. So yeah, I can imagine that stepping aboard your own personal cruise liner.
Yeah.
That'd be a hell of an experience.
Yeah, it was quite something, and it's so easy to get lost because it's so big. And to think that you could get lost on a boat, I mean, it has to be really big to be able to get lost, but I got lost many times.
On your own boat.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So you get on board. Who was on board at that time?
There was 40 crew, and I think about 4 crew got off once we arrived in Panama, and we stayed at port for, I think, a day, and then we went out about 3 miles to sea.
We're going to take a quick ad break here, and we'll be right back with more What It Was Like.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
So what did you do for the first day? I mean, I imagine you're sort of just, it's your own. It's your own ship. So you can go anywhere you want. Like, walk me through that first day.
Well, I think... I was there for about 6 days until about the 28th. So I was there through Christmas, but pretty much every day was mostly the same, just trying to find, just exploring the ship. And there's one key that was like the master key for the entire ship. It opened every door, every room, every everything.
Oh, that's good. So that's exciting.
That was very cool. So the captain gave me the key when I got on board, and I used it. And every room that said "do not enter," or "private," or "personnel only," or whatever, if it said "do not enter," I was going in. So it was quite.
So what did you find? What's behind all these locked doors?
One of the really cool rooms was the rope room, and it was, you wouldn't think that would be a big deal, but when you have to tie something the size of a cruise ship down with ropes when you're coming into port and anchoring, then you have this room that has these ropes that are about 7 or 8 inches diameter, so like they're huge. Yeah. And they're on these
huge
spools of rope. So you have this whole room filled with these huge spools of super thick rope. And when we were in port, they were down and they're super tight. And if you were there at the wrong time when they're bringing things up, then it can be really dangerous, I guess, because if a rope snaps or flicks for some reason, and it's a rope that's 8 inches thick with tons of tension on it, it can be kind of dangerous. So you weren't really supposed to be in there, but I had the key.
Okay. Yeah. Right. You're the king.
Yeah.
Okay. What else did you find? I imagine you went down the engine room. What the hell is, what's that like? What happens down there?
The engine room. Yeah, that was sweet. So first I got a tour of the I don't know what you would call that room, but it was just a room full of control panels with switches. And it, I guess, would be like the master control for connecting different parts of the ship. So it was like on off switches and buttons and controls for a lot of the ship. They all came together into that, like an engineering room. And then from there, there's an entrance to the actual engine room. And the engine room on a cruise ship that size is an entire floor, which is, we went on a tour, and it was a 25-minute tour. I recorded it, so I have it on, one of my online channels, maybe on Vimeo or something like that. And yeah, it's a really cool tour. It's very loud. It's incredibly loud. And everything in there is like machinery that you're maybe used to seeing in various places, but they're scaled up 10 times. Like everything's just huge. Like the motors are not small motors or alternators or generators. They're like 10 times or 50 times what you're used to seeing. So everything's supersized. Everything's huge and loud. And there's pipes going everywhere. There's hot steam. There's very secure doors that partition, there are partitions every 100 feet or something like that, or maybe 50 to 70
right.
feet.
They can be sealed up in case of a hull breach. Is that right?
Yep. Hull breach or whatever else. I'm not sure. Yeah. Fire or
fire. Tsunami. Yeah. I mean, again, when you're describing this, I'm just seeing sort of those scenes from Titanic in my head, where it's just these enormous pistons and, everything's shiny and oiled and hissing and churning. And, I mean, is that right? It hasn't really changed a lot since 1912.
I guess so. I don't remember so much. I don't really remember that part of the movie, The Titanic. I guess I should go back and watch it. I'd probably have a whole new appreciation for it now.
you should have watched that in the pool instead of Aladdin. More on theme anyway.
Yeah.
What's the single weirdest room or cavity on a cruise ship? What's the place that you're like, do they have a morgue, for instance, or something a bit weird like that?
I don't recall there being a morgue. I think there was a jail or a detention center.
Really?
That's
cool.
There was. And I guess that makes sense, because if someone, I don't know, goes crazy while you're out at sea somewhere, you may need to detain him if there's a murder or something on board, then you'd want to detain someone. So I think was one, but I didn't see it. I didn't find that room.
Ah, damn. See, I'd have gone hunting for that thing. Yeah. What about, was there like the most luxurious suite? Was there like a honeymoon suite, with like a love heart shaped bed or anything on the boat?
No, there wasn't. There was no love bed or heart shaped bed. the nicest room I think was either the captain's room or, one of the other guys that were pretty much at the same or close to the same level. Maybe it was the engineer's room. Like those two had the best rooms on the ship.
What was so good about them?
They were big. The location was really nice because it was close to, the top, where the navigation or steering room or captain's room was. So it was really great location, very large, spacious, and comfortable, because those guys had to be comfortable. They're in charge of a pretty, a whole city, really, a floating city.
Yeah.
So those guys needed to be taken care of because they were responsible for so many people.
Huh. Tell me about the bars, because I understand that the ship was sold with the bars fully stocked. Is that right?
I didn't really think about it from that point of view, but there was several bars, and they all had alcohol in them. And there's a few that I went to, and it's like, oh, that's a locked thing. I can't go in there. But then I was thinking, well, hey, it's my ship. I have the key, and I don't drink much anyway, so I didn't indulge. But I was like, okay, because there's that normal thinking that, no, I can't go in there. I can't do that. And then it's like, well, no, I have the key, and it's my ship. So, of course, I can go in there. I can do this. I'm allowed.
all of this surprises me for a few levels. First of all, I would have thought that if I was selling a cruise ship, I'd make sure that there was no liquor left on it because, you know, I'll keep it. You know, like liquor's expensive. I'll keep that, thanks. But apparently the previous owners just sold it and just left all the, you know, all the spirits and all the beers and stuff still in the bars. It seems insane to me. I mean, I would have, especially on Christmas, I'd have probably tucked into it a bit.
I think I had two drinks for Christmas Eve and during Christmas. I'm not really a drinker.
So tell me about Christmas, because I mean, you're there sort of by yourself Christmas Day. I mean, what's it like sort of roaming around an empty cruise ship by yourself on Christmas?
It was fun. I got on the phone and called family and friends and had talked to them all and said hi, and many of them didn't know that I had bought a cruise ship, so that was a fun thing to do for Christmas. It's like, hey, I'm on a cruise ship. It's like, really, you're on a cruise ship? Because like that time, everyone was afraid to go near cruise ships, and no one was. You know, all the cruise ships had shut down, and so they're all surprised I was on a cruise ship. And it's like, well, yeah, I bought a cruise ship.
You're like, never the fact. Don't worry about the fact that I'm on a cruise ship. Like, this is my cruise ship. That's maybe they're overlooking the most surprising element of that story.
Yeah, you know, I told several people that, but they missed that. And I think they missed that because it's so out of the norm that people just think they didn't hear it correctly. So they just assume that I'm just on a cruise ship. I'm on a vacation. And many right. people told me that. They thought, oh, so how's your vacation on that cruise ship? It's like, you know, there's more, probably a third of the people that I talked to just thought I was on a vacation on a cruise ship because they couldn't comprehend. I mean, it is a lot. Yeah. It is a lot to take in.
It's a sentence I've never heard. No one's ever said to me, "I bought a cruise ship." It's not a phrase I've heard come out of anyone's mouth. So when you were like FaceTiming people, I'm guessing, mm-hmm. It was just an empty cruise ship. Like you said before, it's like the size of a city, but you're pretty much the only one on it. Mm-hmm. What's that mood like? Is a bit spooky?
No, not at all. It was, I guess maybe it was a little spooky. I guess I never really thought about it. It's odd that you're walking around from room to room to room and every room's empty and there's no one there. So yeah, from that point of view, it's spooky. It wasn't scary. It was just unusual to have that many rooms that were vacant.
Yeah. 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 I mean, ostensibly it's a structure, it's a space that's designed for crowds. That's mm-hmm. its sole purpose. And then you take away the crowds and it's just like, what is this thing?
Yeah. So it was an adventure just trying to find every nook that I could find and in the ship and see what was there. And on Christmas, it was really cool. They turned on the water park. So there's a big kids water park. That was fun. But then there was the water slide, which was amazing. It was really...
Tell me about the water slide. Tell me about it.
It was pretty high and it had stripes, different color stripes going all the way down. So when you got in it and you were going down, it was like this psychedelic thing. You were almost like on a psychedelic trip or something, with all the flashing lights. So yeah, I probably spent a couple hours there on Christmas Day. just doing water slides. Did several videos going through the water slides. It was a lot
of
fun.
That is fantastic. Yeah, that's awesome. I think I've seen a photo of the actual water slide on this ship, mm-hmm. and it kind of curls around the funnel, doesn't it? Like it's got a real spiral. So like it's high. You start up really high.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably 20 meters high.
Yeah.
Something like that, 15, 20 meters high.
I love water slides. I got to say, you know, I'm 35 now, so it's probably something I need to work past, but there's still a part of me that gets pretty excited about water slides.
You know, I don't know if I'd been on a water slide before. If I have, it's been a very, very long time, and it would just, I know I've been on really small, short, straight ones, but I don't think I've ever been on a curling, curved one that was that high. I don't think I was.
Yeah. Especially not one that like wraps around the smokestack on a cruise liner.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot of them that do that.
No, that's unique. Mm-hmm. Okay. That sounds lovely. Was there a Christmas tree? Was there, you know, did you unwrap some gifts by yourself?
There was a Christmas tree in the bar by the pool. And, I didn't open any presents on the ship.
Why not?
I didn't have any. No one gave me any. I didn't think that far ahead. I didn't plan it. I just was like, okay, I'm going on the cruise ship. And I didn't think, oh, like I'm going for Christmas. I should bring Christmas presents for myself. I just didn't think about that.
What about all the crew? I mean, I understand the crew is largely Ukrainian. So you know, they Europe takes mm-hmm. Christmas pretty seriously. Like, what were they up to?
There was, I guess, a nicer Christmas meal. A lot of the meals were pretty much the same every night, so it was not all that exciting. It wasn't, you know, on a cruise ship, you always hear about these huge meals and all you can eat everything, and it's very, you know, you can eat and eat and eat, and there's tons of variety. With the ship here, we only had 36 people on board, or 37 with me, and it was just crew rations basically. So it wasn't, I mean, it was fine, but I'm usually pretty particular on the food that I eat, so I didn't really. It wasn't really the stuff I would normally eat.
Got it. Yeah, I imagine it was a lot of like macaroni, cheese, and salads comprised of lots of iceberg lettuce.
Yeah, there's a lot of oily, greasy food and a lot of food with gluten, which I don't really eat either of those kinds of foods.
Mm, right. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's cruise food, according to my understanding of it. Okay, all right. Well, I mean, I'm jealous. It sounds amazing. This just sounds like, you know, like a kid in a candy store. Like you just got locked into a candy store over Christmas. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any candy, but it was like every room was a candy, you know, a new candy that I could discover and try and just.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was definitely a kid moment.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Did you sleep in different rooms every night? Like do a sort of like Goldilocks thing?
I thought about that, but I just slept in one of the room, the one room that I was, that I got when I moved in.
Right. And I imagine it was surreal when you wake up in the morning and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm still here on this cruise ship.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It was a very interesting week, and I'm really glad I went on board and experienced it. I took a week off work, and I still worked a little bit, but
yeah,
it was quite an experience.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's move it along, because I mean, you know, the whole purpose of this cruise ship was to start a utopian society moored off the coast of Panama. That kind of didn't work out. So what happened?
Well, the cruise industry has so much regulation. It may be one of the most overregulated industries that exist. There's rules about, there's actually some really stupid rules. So if someone falls overboard and is in the water, there's laws that prevent you from being able to actually save them. Like that, there's all these rules and laws that came in place over the many years. So you can't actually save someone, but you also can't let them drown, because there's rules against that too. So no matter what you do, you're breaking a rule or a law. And
right.
So you might as well just save them, and because that's the right thing to do. but there's laws against either thing. So yeah, there's so much regulation that we weren't able to actually do what we wanted to do with the ship. And we couldn't get the insurance to do what we wanted to do. We had to, even if we took all the oil off the ship, we still had to have insurance for oil spills and oil leaks. And since we were doing something so unusual with the ship that was not being done, we couldn't get the insurance coverage. And probably if we stuck it out for another year or so, we probably would have jumped through all the right hoops to get permissions and approvals. But it's kind of expensive keeping a cruise ship and paying for 36 workers and the fuel. And just gets really expensive to stick around. So we're going to cut our losses and sell it.
Was that a hard decision to make?
No, it just made sense with all the rules and overregulation, and that we, you know, the fact that we weren't going to be able to do what we wanted to do, it's like, okay, well, there's no point in keeping this. We might as well make the call now and move on.
Right, right. Okay. You're a very analytical character, I must say. I think faced with that decision in that moment, I think I'd have felt a bit emotionally attached to the ship. I'd been like, you know, it's my ship. Now it's my baby, and I've got to sell it. I've only just had it for a week. I think you and I would have had different reactions.
Yeah. I guess I've done a lot of work on my ego over my life. So it's like, my ego doesn't take a position on it like that. It's like, okay, well, if this is what is happening, then if this is the best course of action, then there's no point in trying to fight it. And I mean, this is a fight that can't be won. So it's like, let's just move on.
Yeah. I mean, it is frustrating, though, that this whole ship, you know, the idea of this this platform way of living, you know, you're trying to escape the bureaucracy of modern civilization. And in the end, it's this bureaucracy that brought the whole scheme undone. Like, there's an irony there that feels a bit sad to me.
Yeah. it was an interesting situation for sure. We were trying to, the Panama government was very supportive of us getting the ship, and there was rules and regulations with Panama that we could have worked with them and had changed over time, but we just weren't willing to hold on for a year or two to get to that point. So it's, that combined with all the regulations that we had to deal with that were international regulations, and then the insurance issue, then was just like, okay, this doesn't make sense. Would have been nice if we knew this before we bought the ship, but let's cut our losses.
Yeah. Okay. So how did you get rid of it? Did you get rid of it the same way you got it? Just through a broker?
Basically, yes.
Yeah. So you sold it, and I mean, did it end up in a scrapyard, or like, where is it now?
It was bought by a company that is repurposing it, bringing it back to life. There's nothing wrong with the ship. It was going to be scrapped if we didn't buy it. And that would have just been a huge waste, because there's nothing wrong with it. It was a perfectly good ship. It just needed to be updated a little bit. It actually had brand new deck chairs and lots of new furniture, lots of new things. So there was nothing wrong with it at all. It had a fully stocked bar.
Oh, well, that's good. Like I say, you don't want to scrap a fully stocked bar.
No.
All right, so you saved it. You saved the ship.
Saved the ship.
That's good.
Our sister ship was actually scrapped.
Okay. Well, you can only buy so many ships.
Yeah.
Did you, when you sold it, did you take a loss, or did you, maybe the pandemic had moved on a bit by then and you actually got a profit?
We're not officially saying the details, but we're happy.
You made a profit. Good. Good for you. All right. Well, that's amazing. So, all right. So where's the dream at now, right? So you are the CEO of Ocean Builders. You're still obviously very invested in this dream. So tell me, what's happening now?
Well, now we are getting ready to launch our flagship product, which is our C-Pod, which is this futuristic floating home that looks like something right out of the Jetsons. People are always comparing us to the Jetsons because it looks like that kind of round, circular, bubble kind of home. And it's a very futuristic concept. We're developing a lot of technology that hasn't been put into one place, or hasn't been miniaturized down to the size of a house that can be used in a floating house or a boat before, actually. So we have waste recycling technology that has never been miniaturized down to fit into a home. It's usually used for municipal scale waste treatment. So we have this on board. So it's going to be able to recycle all the gray water, which is usually really hard to treat, as well as black water. We have a black water a separating system, so it separates the liquid black water from the solids. The solids go to an incinerator. The waste heat from the incinerator goes to powering the to heating water that can be used in hot showers, dishwashers, sink water, so you have hot water in the sinks to wash dishes or wash your hands or whatever. We're working on several energy technologies. We're starting with solar, but we're also working on some possible wave energy technologies, something called flex electronics, which is basically a material that when you move it, when it flexes, it generates power. It's only a very small amount of power, but it's an experimental thing. We're about to go into a research program with a university that's developing some of these. So we'd like to put them on our floating pods and do an experiments with it. And we have a couple tidal energy projects we're looking at very seriously as well. We're looking at some solar thermal energy generation technologies. So we have a huge R&D effort going on. We have drone delivery services that are coming online. So you'll be able to order pizza or convenience store item foods or just, emergency medical, or if you want a bottle of painkillers for headache, then you can order it on an app and it'll be there in a few minutes.
Wow.
It'll come right
to
your house.
This is exciting. So you guys are doing, there's a range of different technologies and different concepts, but it's all under one roof. You're kind of doing it all.
Yeah, we're doing too much, but it seems like everything's getting done.
Okay. All right. Well, that's, it sounds like you're back to working 17-hour days.
I'm starting to get things organized a little bit better now. It takes a long time because this is something that's never been done before. So there's no template for it. And we're not just building a home, like a house. We're building an unusual house that's never been done before with new technology and new processes that have to be figured out because no one's ever done it before. And then we're developing all these peripheral technologies that need to come together to make it all viable, because the average person that's used to having their nice long hot showers and normal toilets and normal bathroom experience and, you know, lots of energy to run their home, if they had to scale back to having a 30-second shower per day max, no hot water, having bathrooms that smell, you know, they just, it's not very appealing. So we're trying to make this so that it is appealing for people. And, we're trying to make something on, we're trying to make a home that on the water that is as comfortable or better than what people are used to on land.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, that sounds like kind of where it needs to be attractive, I think, for like the average punter. Mm-hmm. I think living on sea, there's a bit of a barrier of entry for, I think, for a lot of people who might feel, you know, intimidated on some level by the idea of living at sea. So if you, yeah, if you make it that comfortable, like, you know, I'll be there. That sounds good.
Yeah. I think once people, if I can just get someone on the Seapod for one night, I think it will be really hard to go back to your normal life.
Mm.
Like the quality of life you'll have, like number one, the view that you have when you're about 3 to 4 meters up over the water, it's spectacular. And you know, most people spend their whole year working to have 1 or 2 weeks vacation, and they usually plan those vacations around places that are, you know, a tropical island somewhere or somewhere with a beach or water, and that's where people go to refresh, recharge, regenerate, and you know, that's where people go. So imagine being able to live there every day. There's something really, really magical about living near the water, but it's even more magical living on the water.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I think I need to see a horizon line every few weeks, otherwise I get a bit stir crazy. I've got two more questions for you, and and the first one is a silly one, and then the second one's a serious one. The first one is, in like the top five moments of your life, or sort of like experiences in your life, where does buying and roaming around a cruise ship sit on that list?
Interesting question. Top five, I would say.
Yeah.
Top five experience. I mean,
three. Number three? Number two?
No, not as high as two. Three, four, five.
Okay. That's up there. You know, if you go with three, that's up there. All right. Okay. And then my more serious question is, when you look back at the whole thing, you know, what do you feel like you've walked away with? What have you learned?
Actually, that kind of relates to what you were going to ask, what you said you were going to ask earlier about what I thought about the Guardian article, because the Guardian article was saying that it was a huge failure, and it was, you know, and they're very, it kind of had a very negative tone. The whole article actually wasn't that negative, but it had, you know, kind of clickbait negative titles and stuff that really...
Yeah, the packaging. The packaging was negative.
The packaging was negative. And for me, if you try something and it doesn't work, like that's how you get places. You try things. And if you stop when you don't succeed, that is failure. If you just, you know, if someone just gives up at life or trying to do something, when you get one no, or when you get a negative response, or you don't get the result you want, then that's the recipe for failure in life. Like no thing of value has come the first time you try to do something. You know, it's usually you need to work hard. You need to try things And if the first time you try something, it doesn't succeed, you try to do it another way. You try to go around, you go over and you go up and under and try new ways of doing things until you find a way to be successful. And that's the only way. That's how every major technological invention has ever been made, or every breakthrough that's ever been made in human history. It was from repeated trial and error and lots of failure. The most successful people are the people that have failed the most. So, yeah.
There's a saying about that, which is fail often quickly, or something to that effect. Like, just get all your failures out of the way so you can get on with the successful one.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was my big, another take. I'm very much like that anyway. I always keep on going. I'm always very determined. If I have set a goal, you just keep on trying until you get the result you want. So I think that's the big takeaway that people should take from this is don't give up because you get a no or because you don't get the result that you want immediately. I think people these days are so used to getting instant gratification that they don't put in the work to get what they want or to get the end result that they want.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Grant, I think that's a powerful note to end on. I think you're absolutely right. And I guess I'm happy on just like a personal level for you that, you know, you treating it like it was an experiment and not the definitive, you know, it wasn't like just we got one shot at this and if we don't pull it off, then that's it. Then, you know, the dream's over. So I'm happy to hear that you're still in the game. You know, you're moving forwards. That's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, for anyone interested in your work, how can they follow you?
You can go to our website, oceanbuilders.com. We have a newsletter. We don't send out very many newsletters, but we also have a blog on the website as well. And we do one or sometimes two blog posts a day that give you updates on all the technologies that we're developing, which are pretty all-encompassing. So it's pretty interesting to follow. And then we also get factory updates of what we're doing at the factory. So you can see what we're doing. You know, there's a lot of people that talk about building these, futuristic floating cities, but no one actually really does anything. So you can go to our website and you can see every day what we're doing. And there's a huge international effort to make this happen.
Amazing. Amazing. Grant, you're an inspiration. And thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Okay. Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
If you've enjoyed today's episode and you're thinking, hey, I've got a story that could work for what it was like, please hit me up. I love your feedback. I love your story suggestions. I love just hearing from people. I'm Julian Morgans on Instagram or at MorgansJulian on Twitter. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Tuffery. It was edited and mixed by Jimmy Saunders, and he also did our theme music. Our cover art is by Naomi Lee Beveridge, and this whole thing has been a Super Real production.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.